Eric Bibb and Grant Dermody, we are here in the middle of a tour promoting Booker's guitar.
Indeed.
I mean, obviously you haven't got the guitar on the road with you. It's still in the keeping of the man that Booker White gave it to, yeah?
That's right.
But I'm intrigued by finding out, or thinking I found out, that on this album's not the first time you've played it.
I met the guitar prior to the recording that I made with the actual guitar. This was some years back. A friend of mine up in the north came up to me after a gig and said, I've been following your music and I'm really happy that you're out there carrying on the country blues tradition with your playing and singing. And then his son kind of said something like an aside, kind of just in his ear. And he said, oh, by the way, if you're interested in playing the guitar that was owned and hugged by the great Booker White, I could bring it by your hotel tomorrow morning. And I said, let me think about it. No, I said, I left at the chance, and I said, sure, I'd love that. And he did, and he brought the guitar with his son, who was his bodyguard, because this is a valuable instrument, you know.
Yeah.
This is an instrument that B.B. King called the Holy Relic, you know. And I played it and was awed by the experience. And then I met him again at another gig up in that way, and at that point we talked about he made some lovely photographs, and he said, by the way, if you'd ever like to record with this guitar, you know, just get in touch. I'd be happy to make it available to you. And I went back and wrote a song about the experience and sent him the lyrics, and he said, I'll put these in the guitar case so that they can get to know each other. And he said, when you're ready, just give me a call and I'll book a studio, and you should record that song with that guitar.
Right, now you're doing New Home for us, and your booklet note says, you know, this is, imagine a blues brother in the 30s.
Yeah.
And, but there's a specific reference to 40 Acres and a Mule, isn't
there?
Yes,
there is.
Which was quite a lot earlier, wasn't it?
Yes. That,
what was his name? Polk, wasn't it?
Yes, was the one who decreed that this was part of, I think, Reconstruction, post-slavery, some kind of attempt, half-hearted, mind you, at some kind of recompense, you know, some kind of compensation for the horrors, the trauma, and the injustice of slavery. And I think 40 Acres and a Mule was basically promised to each African-American household who wanted such a thing to get started in their new life as free people. Spike Lee has a production company, I think, called 40 Acres.
40 Acres and a Mule, that's right, yes.
Yeah, I noted that.
That's irony of the first order.
I'm building a new home, across the county line. I'm building a new home, across the county line. Up on a high hill, where the view's so fine. Down in the lowland, water tastes like turpentine. Down in the lowlands, water tastes like turpentine. I'm going up to country, where it tastes like cherry wine. I made a piece of money, but I won't say how. I made a piece of money, but I won't say how. My own 40 acres, my own mule and raking plow. But my own 40 acres, don't have to scrape and bow. Thank you. was talking like a radio in my head. I heard a voice talking like a radio in my head. I'm about to tell you just what it said. I put your feet on solid ground, by and by. Put your feet on solid ground, by and by. When a river gets to rising, you'll be high and dry.
New Home.
New Home.
Which is a lovely new song.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Floodwater is about the 1927 Louisiana flood.
Mm.
And obviously there have been previous songs from...
Yeah, Mississippi was really the delta that it flooded, you know.
Yes, and yes.
It, yes.
Right. And, you know, from Bessie Smith to Randy Newman...
That's right.
People have written about that.
Charlie
but you,
Patton,
but you knew there was another song still waiting to be written.
What I wanted to do with the whole project was add my voice to the whole canon of songs that really described an era, described the world of many of my early blues heroes. And I thought about that event, and I'd seen photographs of it, and it just hit me pretty hard. And this is, mind you, not so long after, when I wrote it, not so long after Katrina. And I thought, well, this is just such a big event. It must have impacted many of my heroes. And perhaps I could write a song about it. And it came to me rather easy. It wasn't difficult. I had an aunt, a great aunt, who sat on the front porch of my grandmother's home in Louisville, Kentucky, and told me about her experiences with that flood. And that was kind of reverberating in my head when I was writing it. Yeah.
There's an intriguing line in there about the sister who had a vision.
Yes.
And the church paid her no mind.
Right.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, I don't know how that line came to me. It occurred to me that it was possible that some people in a dream or somehow might have had some kind of forewarning of this event. And many church people, I feel, are that open to life and to God speak or whatever you want to call it, so that it didn't seem improbable that somebody might have seen this coming somehow, had a sense of it. And I just imagine that somebody maybe shared something with the congregation and they kind of, you know, made little of it, made light of it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, in the song New Home, there's a reference also, there's kind of a link. I tried to link some of these songs. The line that goes, I heard a voice talking like a radio in my head, and I'm going to tell you what it said. And the voice says to this man who's building his new home, when the river gets to rising, by and by I'll make sure that you're, you know, on dry ground. Somehow I'll see to it. And that was kind of a link to that whole premonition thing. I just wanted to connect these songs somehow.
Flood water spreading all around. blood with water spreading all around. People everywhere trying to make higher ground. Many met their maker in a watery grave. Many met their maker in a watery grave. If your neighbor had a boat, well, you might have been saved. Might have been saved. Bibles floating in the water, had to leave it all behind. Bibles floating in the water, had to leave it all behind. Sister had a vision, church paid her no mind. Paid her no mind. People straddling their rooftops, water reached to their knees. People straddling their rooftops, water reaching to their knees. Heard the preacher holler, Lord, 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 have mercy if you please. Flood water fires my eyes could see. Flood water fires my eyes could see. 1927 never leave my memory. Never leave my memory.
Let's turn to Grant Dermody, because the chromatic harmonica playing on Floodwater is just sensational.
No,
just
thank you.
So beautiful.
Thank you very
and,
much.
And tell us, do you play chromatic a lot?
Not nearly as much as I play diatonic, but I do play. And I'm working, there are many roads to travel musically, and my favorite road is country blues, but I'm learning how to play chromatic jazz. I'm not very good at it yet, but I'm working on it.
Will you be teaching chromatic at the Blues Week in August?
No.
You'll be teaching diatonic?
Yes.
And it's all taking place from the 1st to the 6th of August, organized by Michael Roach.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the University of Northampton. And what will you be concentrating on?
I'll be teaching two different kinds of classes. I'll be teaching an advanced class and a beginning class. And one of the things I really want to make clear is there is no such thing as being too much of a beginner to come to this week. Whatever level you are, we will find you, and we will find the way to help you move to the next level. So the beginning will be very much about tone production, how to hold the harmonica, just very basic. Start at square one and move forward.
Yes.
With the advanced players, I'm going to be doing a great deal of concentrating on finding where their comfort zone is. What is the thing that you do a lot? And then let's take a look at that and see if that works in all of the context in which you put that. And then how do we move out of that? How do we move into different ways of hearing things rhythmically and note-wise? So we'll be doing that, and I will also be doing a great deal of concentrating on how do you move out of the practice room and into playing with other people. So how do you as a harmonica player sit down and play a country blues tune with a guitar player and it has two chords and six chords in it when all you're used to doing is playing 1, 4, 5? So where are those notes on the harmonica? What do you do? And we'll demystify that for you and help you. It's all about making music together.
I think two things strike me most about your playing. One is the richness of the tone and the variety of tone that you use. Mm. And the other is simply the placement of phrasing, which is, in both instances, I would imagine, Eric, that those were things that struck you. About
absolutely, God. Absolutely, absolutely.
And it fits great with your baritone guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been playing that a lot?
Yes, I have. In recent years, this is a guitar that I asked my friend Roger Bucknall to build for me, a wonderful luthier up in Penrith. And he asked me some questions about what I thought it needed to sound like and what kind of tone woods to use, and we talked about that. I ended up using something very rare called pink ivory, which is a kind of pink natural wood from southern Africa. And so I call that guitar Pinky. And Pinky's been on the road with me for quite a while. Yeah, yeah.
You've got some days off. How do you spend those? I mean, you can't be doing radio programs and interviews and stuff all the time. Do you actually get, you know, I don't know.
You do get some
antique
time
shops.
Off.
What do you do?
Well, good question. What I like to do is go to the best local bookshop, and I just love a good bookshop. There's just no end to the stuff that you can find to browse through or overload your credit card with, you know.
Sometimes your songs give us a real insight into, mm-hmm. you know, what you're like. Mm-hmm. And, of course, a lot of the things on the album do reveal your reading,
mm-hmm.
Such as your knowledge of, you know, 40 Acres and a Mule.
Yeah.
And when it comes to With My Maker, I Am mm-hmm. One, I think you said that some of this is based on the writings of Deepak Chopra.
Yes, I've read quite a few of his books and enjoyed them. I think he's insightful and he's got a way of imparting some deep stuff without being too highbrow or he's definitely got a brotherly vibe to his sharing of what he's learned, and he's connected to a long tradition of spiritual thought, and I enjoy him. The section of his book that really inspired that song was something about non-judgmental attitudes, you know, and I got to thinking about how in the communities that spawn this wonderful music that we call blues and gospel and all of that, there has historically been this divide, this huge dichotomy between the sacred and the profane, which is funny because so many of my heroes had all kinds of songs in their repertoires. Booker White also had a lot of gospel sides in his catalog. But many of them, Charlie Patton, Son House, Blind Willie McTell, John Hurt, all of these people who really impacted my playing and singing, played all kinds of songs, blues, spirituals. And I wanted to let people know where I stood on that whole issue, you know, that basically it's one music. I remember a discussion with the wonderful guitar player Roy Gaines, and he said, you know, I think it's down to marketing because this is not separate genres. This is one music, Eric, you know. We are multidimensional human beings who praise God and who have a good rollicking time on a Saturday night, and we don't really have to slice ourselves up into categories, you know. With My Maker, I Am One is a song that I would actually like you to join us on. I would like to have my harmonic horn section here. So if you would, we're in D. So
okay.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah.
And you take the solo. You take the first solo. That'd be great, Paul. That'd be great. Okay. Deacon Jones.
Okay.
I am the preacher shouting out the news. I am the juke joint stomper playing the blues. I am the holy roller giving Jesus my cares. I am the candy man pushing my wares. I am the master whipping my hand. I am the slave from a distant land. I am the cowboy branding my steels. I am the Cherokee Brave on the Trail of Tears. After all is said and done, with my Maker I am one. After all is said and done, with my Maker I am one. I am the Okie on a dusty road. I am the banker with the tailor-made clothes. I am the hobo in a cold box car. I am the railroad baron with the long cigar. I am the ghetto brother about to lose his lease. I am the landlord cutting off the heat. I am the prisoner playing cards. I am the warden looking out on the yard. After all is said and done, with my Maker I'm one. After all is said and done, with my Maker I'm one. I am the junkie craving a fix. I am the homeless child on the street so mean. I am the movie star on the silver screen. I am the champion at the finish line. I am the beggar holding up the sign. I am the rookie trying to make the Hall of Fame. I am the gangster fixing the game. After all is said and done, with my Maker I won. Oh yeah. After all is said and done, with my Maker I won.
Eric Bibb and Grant Dermody playing that excellent second solo, and myself politely invited. I must say I enjoyed that, always do, and I enjoyed talking to Eric and Grant there.